Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, life on the farm, I kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy.
And I can take you for a ride on my big green tractor. My tractor's sexy.
Goodbye, city life.
Thank God I'm a country boy. Woohoo!
Yes, it's our monthly check-in with our good friend Ryan Jenkins. He owns Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida. He makes the peanuts that your kids eat in their peanut butter and their Snickers, and he also farms the cotton that winds up in your Levi's or your t-shirts, and sometimes he does other stuff as well, a whole variety of other stuff as well. And it is January, so happy New Year, Ryan. Welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Happy New Year. Good morning. How y'all doing?
Oh, man, we're doing great, doing great. I see you're a multimedia star now, not just on the radio, but they have put a whole feature that has pictures of you farming in the PNJ with an article about the loss of farmland in Santa Rosa County.
Yeah, I guess it was a slow news week.
Well, it is the new year, you know, sometimes. But they had taken pictures, obviously, back when you were harvesting cotton back in, what, probably October or something like that. But the article is all about preserving.
Early October.
Yeah. The article is all about preserving farmland, something you and I have talked many, many times about. The basic problem, right, is if, you know, you can rent out your land at a couple thousand dollars an acre to a farmer, to somebody like you who farms it, or you can sell it to a developer for $15,000-$20,000 an acre. Well, math is math, right?
Yes, it's tough. It's one of the most difficult positions anyone can be in. You know, the deal is a farmer can no longer control his destiny. He can't afford to buy the land for the prices that the developer can afford to pay for the land. So we're in a contest against developers typically, and there's just no way, you know, they're going to make way more money out of that land than we would ever make out of it in a lifetime of farming it. So it's a difficult position to be in, and people just need to be aware, you know, that it is a problem. We obviously have to have land to be able to continue farming, and I've said it many, many times. Believe me when I say you don't want us to have to depend on another country for our food and fiber. And if we don't kind of change the trajectory of where we're headed, that's what's going to end up happening before it's all said and done. And it's strictly because we can't continue to own enough land to be able to farm and produce enough products to clothe and feed everyone.
And it's one of these challenges where, and I think you even said it in the article, was that, you know, a lot of people have this idea like, well, if I farm so many acres, I must be rich. No, you farm it. You don't own it. You know, pay land rent to the people who own it. But the problem is, you know, economically for them, they make more money by, you know, selling to somebody else, a developer or something like that. Is the challenge. And there's been, you know, proposals, everything from like land trusts to kind of conservation easements where, you know, governments or, you know, other people might invest, nonprofits might pay for various limitations on how land can be used, subsequent owners and things like that. It's something I know has been worked on a lot, both at the state and the federal level. Are we, in your mind, any closer to getting a viable solution to make this problem better?
Those are some of the things that are being looked at and they're being worked on, and they are, I would say they're in their infancy in some ways, you know, they're starting to happen. But it's still very much a work in progress. You know, it's such a slippery slope because the deal is we have to protect our farmland, but at the same time, we don't want to tell people what they can and can't do with their land.
Amen.
You know, it's not fair if a farmer has, you know, acquired land over their career and then they get older and basically die. And they leave it to their sons and daughters, and they don't want to be farmers. It's not really fair for them to be stuck with it and can't do anything with it other than farm, if that's not what they wanted to do. Or same way with a farmer. If he gets in trouble somewhere along the line financially and he needs to sell some land to be able to pay his debts or whatever, you know, he needs to be able to do that. So it's very But at the same time, we don't need to be out there developing. I feel like we don't need to be out there developing prime farmland when there's some less desirable land over here that we could develop, if that makes sense. So I think we have to incentivize some of those things and really work toward a solution that benefits everyone.
Yeah, I agree. All of those are the parameters, and right now we have a push for development in Northwest Florida that's really pushing in one direction on these problems. And once the land leaves rows and crops and becomes homes, you never unplant homes. And that's the basic.
That's great. Once you plant a home on it, it's done.
Yeah, you never get another crop out of that thing. We're talking to Ryan Jenkins, the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida. Ryan, I did want to ask you. First of all, it's January. The ground is hard. There's not a lot of rain, although yesterday was an exception. But you're not planting or harvesting right now. What are you doing with your time?
Well, we have all of our cover crops planted now. So basically all the field work's done for a month or so. And so this is really our cleaning up and fixing everything that we tore up in the fall time of the year. A lot of mechanicing going on. And then a lot of just planning. It's the time of the year that we have to get our operating loan for this coming year. December, January is that time frame. So that's something that's harder to do every year. And also, believe it or not, it'll be planting time the middle of April or so.
Yeah.
And it's time to start ordering seeds. So that's one of the most important decisions a farmer makes every year is what type of crop is he going to plant where? And what seed is he going to use? What variety of seed? So those things are, we'll be looking at data from the past years and from past trials, trying to decide what will do best on our land, looking at the commodity markets, which is almost impossible to do now, trying to figure out what crop may potentially make us the most money this year, and then try to figure out if that'll work into our rotation that's needed. So there's a lot of planning and a lot of thinking that's going on right now. And like I say, it's time to place our orders because April will be here soon. And it takes time for them to come up with the seed and to get it treated and shipped in and all that. So there's a lot going on, even though you don't see us out in the field much.
I don't know, Ryan. I mean, you make it sound like it's hard, but like all you've got to know is over the course of the next 10 months, what's the weather going to be like? How hot's it going to be? How much is it going to rain or not? What are the costs of all the various inputs that you have to factor into? And then what's your end price going to be 10 months from now? It doesn't seem like it's that hard to figure out.
It's not. I'm really surprised there's not more farmers than there are.
And also figure out where you're going to get your money in an industry that routinely struggles to make ends meet and break even, and depend on the kindness of strangers for basically everything that happens in your life. I don't know that it seems all that hard to me, but whatever. I just do radio.
There's really not much to it.
for those of you who do not have a sarcasm gene. 100% sarcasm. I saw an article, and I don't think you and I have had a chance to talk about this on the air, and I thought it was interesting. It was just because I come from the land of corn. I come from, Illinois originally. And it was an article that talked about a new kind of corn that's being developed that's short instead of tall. It's only 5 feet tall instead of, 7 or 8 feet tall. And it's highly resistant to wind because it's shorter. And you can plant it a little bit more densely because it has less sun blockage because it's not as tall. And I thought, I should talk about this with Ryan. I know you do a lot of experimenting, with corn. Corn's not a major crop for you, but you do a lot of experimenting with it. Is that something that you guys have been playing with? Do you know much about that? I'm just kind of curious your take on it. You're my expert, so I'm asking.
I have not done any trial work with that, but I think all the things that you just mentioned are real things that do make a difference in your final yield. This part of the world, after a storm, there's no infrastructure here for corn. So basically we have to let our corn get field dry. We don't have a lot of dryers in our area and grain bins and things like that. So for us to sell it, we have to let it dry in the field, which makes it more susceptible to wind damage. So afternoon thunderstorm, you can have a beautiful crop. Afternoon thunderstorm come through, blow it all down on the ground, and lose half of it just in the afternoon type storm. So being more storm resistant. Storm resistance is something that we look at in every trial we do, no matter what the crop is, because, you know, of the hurricanes and the afternoon storms that we have so often here. So that is something that's big. It's easier for it to translocate the nutrients through the plant, the moisture through the plant.
There's
a lot of things about it that make sense to me. So I would be interested in looking at it and trialing. I can tell you one time we did have a variety trial, and the ugliest, shortest-looking variety out there that you wouldn't have thought would have done anything won the whole trial.
Huh.
So maybe there's something to it.
Ugliest, shortest. The Andrew McKay variable? Is that what I feel like that's what you're talking
about? Kind of like that.
Take that a little personally. I mean, you know, you're, what, 6'2"? So, you know, who you're talking about here. last thing that we always like to end with, Ryan, do you have a farm fact for us this month?
Well, you know, when I couldn't go to sleep last night, I was trying to think what farming fun fact I was going to use today. I said, you know, we never talk about livestock in Santa Rosa County.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I don't know that we've ever mentioned it. But I looked up the data this morning, and did you know that Santa Rosa County is home to right at 8,000 head of cattle?
I see them when we're bicycling. I definitely see them around, but so I wouldn't have even known where to guess at the number. 8,000 head of cattle?
Yep, 8,000. You know, it goes up and down, but that's kind of where it averages out at every year.
Well, that'll keep my family in hamburgers for about 3 weeks. So, okay.
I'm good to go for about a week with that.
With your two boys. Ryan Jenkins, he is the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida. As always, Ryan, thank you for the time. But more importantly, thank you for doing what you do to educate people about farming and for actually doing the farming that, you know, makes peanuts and cotton for us, essential things that feed my kids and clothe them. I really appreciate it, sir. We'll talk to you again next month.
Thank you for having us on. I'll see you soon.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include 2 times Tuesday, 6 free shrimp added to the 6-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit David's Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Join Leadership Pensacola on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10:30. Leadership Pensacola's project for 2025 is to help Family Promise of Escambia County remodel a local church-owned home and help Family Promise assist temporary displaced families. Join Leadership Pensacola on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10:30.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
President Trump wants to cut $2 trillion from the federal budget, and I have the plan that gets him there. I'm Greg Merk, Republican for Congress. We have over 3 million federal employees. I will propose to cut them in half. This reduction will save $150 billion on salaries and an additional $150 billion in benefits. We need to cut off the cash payments to illegals, and they will self-deport. I will propose Medicare reform, regulation cuts, and repealing the Davis-Bacon Act. With a background in finance, I know how to fix Washington and get the $2 trillion in cuts. We live in the most military district in America. I served over 2 decades on active duty as a Navy pilot and Air Force B-1 pilot, with multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's critical we send a combat-tested leader to Washington who understands the needs of our service members and retirees, and no one in this race has more military experience than me. Fact is, we have the plan, but we need the will. Send me to Washington, and not only will the people want it, they will demand it. It's time to send the Alpha to Washington. It's time to put Merck to work. I'm Greg Merk, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Greg Merk for Congress.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Morning, 6:25 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. It's 6:25. Let's do our traffic on the fives, brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer that Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Still no accidents to let you know about right now, We're seeing some backups if you are on 9 Mile. And if you're at the intersection of 9 Mile and 29 going southbound, you're going to see some delays there. But other than that, traffic is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Yeah. Good morning, Pensacola. This is Walker Wilson filling in for Andrew McKay here on News Radio 92.3 and 1620. We do have a guest calling in right now. We have the executive director of the Escambia County Children's Trust, Lindsay Cannon. Gave her the wrong time to call in a few minutes ago, but she was able to make sure the kids got into school, and I'm sure they're excited about that here on a Tuesday morning to go to school super early. But Lindsay, thank you for calling in.
Hey, great. Good to hear from you. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. I know you've had your hands full. It's been, I guess, a year now that you've been at the Trust, and I know you're doing a great job and really turning that program around and kind of from what you were handed, I guess, or what fell in your lap and trying to get things back in order over there. So I know you've got some micro grants that are coming out that you wanted to let people know about, and then also Warrington Resource Day.
Yes, we've got a lot going on. So we are kicking the year off with a bang. We started this process back in October around our micro grants. We didn't know they were going to be micro grants, but we had a lot of people reaching out to us from the community perspective, as well as other nonprofits, really calling for some sort of support of our youth related to the violence that was occurring in their communities. And so we did a focus group with a cross section of law enforcement, community providers. We also brought in some people from the school district as well, just to kind of get their perspective on what that looked like, and local pastors. It was really great. But really what it told us is there are a lot of initiatives that need to be started really from that grassroots, people that are in those communities that really love those kids and want to see change where they live. So we started looking at some different models around that. In the meantime, we've also been meeting with a lot of other nonprofits that have needs. They could be a one-time need for a computer lab, let's say, or something that's ongoing, outreach to the local community, a variety of different needs. And so when we started looking at some of those what we call recapture dollars, or dollars that were not spent, we wanted to reinvest those back in the community in these micro grants, which would give some opportunities for nonprofits that work with us potentially to expand some things they may not have budgeted for but need. And then we also will give that opportunity to others that are just starting or maybe just want to have those one-time sort of supports for the programs they are running. So the CARE grant was born from all of those conversations and research, and they will hopefully be launched. We're having a board meeting tonight, and hoping to really set that time frame for January 30th when we'll put those out for RFP. And people can start looking at it and applying.
Great. That's exciting. That's an awesome program. And look forward to following what y'all have going on there. And then we've got about 45 seconds left. And what you got Warrington Resource Day coming up. And just wanted to let you plug that and what people need to be looking for.
Yeah, sure. So Warrington Prep has, as I know, they're a new charter middle school that's been engaged in the last year, and they've asked for us to, hey, we know ECT has a lot of programs and a lot of them center around the areas where our kids live. Could we not just have you and all of your providers come in here one day and set up tables, let's hand out some breakfast, and let families come in and learn what you have available.
And when is that?
So we are going to kick that up. So it'll be January 25th from 9 to 12 at Warrington Preparatory Academy.
That's awesome.
So well, Lindsay, welcome the community to come in and visit with us.
Thanks so much for calling in today. Sorry it was shorter than expected, but you're doing a fabulous job with
fun.
The Trust, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
All right, you too. Thank you so much, Walker. Good luck today.
Thanks.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Special Counsel Jack Smith says in a final report there was enough evidence to convict President-elect Trump if his election interference case had not been dropped due to his re-election.
Smith wrote in the report his team stood up for the rule of law as it investigated Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. And while Smith considered charging the president-elect with incitement of insurrection, he opted against it.
Fox's Carmen Roberts in his final report, Special Counsel David Weiss says President Biden is wrong to claim his son Hunter was unfairly prosecuted. Senate confirmation hearings start this morning for Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth.
Democrats question his qualifications to lead the federal government's largest agency, and they're also expected to press him on the financial mismanagement and sexual assault allegations against him, which Hegseth has denied.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. Today's hearing starts at 9:30 Eastern. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 38 degrees. It is clear skies this morning in Pensacola. There might be a rate increase coming for the Holly Navarre water system. The utilities board says they're supporting a proposed 12% rate hike.
On average, a member that uses around 5,000 gallons a month could be expected to pay around $7, $8 a month more a month, and then by annually that would be about $90 a year increase in their water bill. That's for a water and sewer customer. Water only customer, because not all our customers have sewer, a water customer would be about, I think it was around $2 to $3 a month, so around $30 extra a year.
CEO Jeff Kriegler. Board members say that increase would fund infrastructure improvements and account for inflation. A consultant was recently brought in to assess the affordability of an increase. During a budget workshop, they said the utility was far below what they considered the affordability threshold for the area's median household income. The consultant recommended that 12% increase, along with another increase in 2026. The board officially votes on the increase January 21st. Wildfires in Southern California have proved devastating for one man from Escambia County, Pensacola native Jerry Blank. He lost his home and his business in the Pacific Palisades fire. He's been teaching MMA in California now for about four decades. He tells Channel 3 that the damage is just hard to fathom and says it's horrible to think about how many people have lost everything. He does have a GoFundMe. So far, he's gotten about $30,000 in donations to rebuild his studio. The Gulfarium Care Center in Fort Walton Beach has taken in eight cold-stunned Kemp's Ridley sea turtles. They're now receiving life-saving care there as part of a collaborative rescue effort. The turtles were transported from the New England Aquarium. They arrived at the care center and are being rescued from frigid northern waters. The care center says if you see a sea turtle in distress, call the FWC. The Pensacola Blue Wahoos have a new four-legged canine friend. They're looking for the community's help in naming the dog. The choices are Diamond, Dinger, Double, Dugout, and DeLuna. Vote for your favorite name online. We'll be posting a link on the News Radio website here this hour. Well, we're about a week away now from early voting in the Republican primary for the upcoming special election.
The early voting is this Saturday till the following Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and we're only hosting it at seven locations.
Escambia County Supervisor of Elections Robert Bendery says they did cut costs by eliminating a few of their early voting locations that they had been using previously. There are 10 candidates that are vying for the Republican nomination for the District 1 congressional seat vacated by Matt Gaetz. In Santa Rosa County, voting also runs the same days, but their hours are slightly different from 8 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. They've got two locations in Milton and in Gulf Breeze. The governor and top Republicans at odds over a special session. Governor DeSantis asking House and Senate lawmakers to gather in Tallahassee in a few weeks. Senate President Ben Albertrin and House Speaker Daniel Perez, though, saying that calling a special session would be premature. DeSantis wants the special session to address immigration, hurricane relief, condo reforms, and changes in how voters can amend the Constitution. Perez and Albertrin say those issues could be addressed when the regular session begins in March. It's 6:35 at News Radio. John's got our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Brought to you by Generator Source, powering Pensacola businesses with industrial generators to commercial backup systems with the most trusted brands. Expert installation and 24/7 support at GeneratorSource.com. No accidents to let you know about right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Starting to see backup right at North Palafox and Brent Lane. We are seeing some backups there going north and southbound on North Palafox. But other than that, traffic's rolling smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
And thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your First Morning Weather Update. We will see a beautiful day today with partly cloudy skies, high near 53 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 41. For Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 54. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 39. Small chance of an isolated shower on Thursday with a high near 58 and a low near 43. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. 38 in Pensacola, 39 in Milton. Also 39 in Gulf Breeze. Our next news at 7 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The Producer Price Index, which measures wholesale inflation, is set for release at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Economists polled by Dow Jones predict that headline PPI grew 0.4%, while the core figure, which excludes food and energy, rose 0.3%. Treasury yield pulled back this morning after the 10-year yield hit a fresh 14-month high in the previous session. The 10-year yield fell nearly 3 basis points to 4.778%. The CMA is assessing whether Google has a strategic market status under the new UK Digital Markets, Competition and Consumers Act. Designation of a company having SMS would give the regulator the power to impose changes to prevent anti-competitive behavior. Sarah Cardell, the CMA's chief executive, said the regulator was probing Google's dominance of the search market to ensure a level playing field. Futures are slightly higher ahead of key inflation data later this morning. That's Your Money Now.
I'm Michael Dylan Thompson, Republican candidate for Congress, here in District 1 of Florida. I'm a proud Pensacola native, first-generation college student, and a Yale Law graduate. But it was when I was working at the cookie store in Cordova Mall as a teenager, helping my family pay the bills, that I truly learned the value of hard work. Now, I'm running for Congress to do what the establishment has failed to do. I promise to end this homeowner's insurance nightmare, streamline access to veterans' benefits, and take education back, local. I'm bringing new ideas, along with fresh, conservative leadership, right when we need it most. On January 28th, elect a hometown leader you can trust, and send your lawyer to Washington to fight for you. I'm Michael Dylan Thompson, and I will be honored to earn your vote. I encourage you to learn more about what I stand for and see early voting locations. Please visit mdt4congress.com. That's mdt4congress.com.
Paid for and approved by Michael Dylan Thompson, Republican for Congress.
You know, one of the things that I appreciate about Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty is they do all these little things, and all the little things add up to big differences in the results. And there's one kind of example of that that's always stuck with me that Christina told me about. Is she says, look, when somebody comes and looks at one of my houses and they don't make an offer, what I do is I call the agent and I say, you know, hey, I saw the person looked at the house and, you know, didn't make an offer. What did they think? Or what didn't they like? Or, you know, what happened? And then let them talk. And they'll say, well, the price was too high. Or they'll say, it didn't fit my family's needs. Or I didn't like the layout of the living room. Or, you know, whatever. And then what Christina learns from that is what might be the impediments that knowing this can help her sell that house in the future. Or, oh, well, we can fix that. If we fix that, would they be interested? Maybe they would be. You might even be able to turn it into a sale. I mean, that's a little thing. It's sort of obvious. Everybody should do it. But she actually does that. And it's all those little things that make for big results. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty, 723-9158.
Start your year in a new Subaru from Anderson Subaru. 2024 Crosstrek model starting at $25,262. 2024 Forester Wilderness model starting at $36,222. And 2025 Outback model start at $28,868. Love is out there. Find it at Anderson Subaru. Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Splash Magazine covers the coast like the Gulf of Mexico. Each month, Splash Magazine offers a calendar of events, plus tips on where to shop, dine, and play. Learn about the month's special events, live entertainment, and interesting local people. Learn how to catch fish with Captain Dave Yelverton. See what is worth watching on your streaming services. Tom Nolan will tell you the latest. Find out how to dress for the changing Florida weather with Dan Wells. Get the most out of the Emerald Coast by reading Splash Magazine each month. For more information, call Gulf Breeze News at 850-932-8986 or visit GulfBreezeNews.com online.
Are you ready for a triple dose of wit, insight, and laughter? Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show from 11 to 2. Your daily dose of engaging conversation and hilarious banter. Join Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins as they tackle the biggest news stories, pop culture moments, and everything in between. They'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud from start to finish. Don't miss a minute of the fun. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show, 11 till 2 on News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning, Pensacola. This is Walker Wilson filling in for Andrew McKay here on News Radio 92.3 and 1620. If you got questions, concerns, or just want to give me a thumbs up or thumbs down, you can text in to 850-437-1620. And today I thought I'd take a little bit of a twist on what Andrew does when he has the farmer on to talk about farming life here in the Panhandle. And so I've got Jimmy Wilson, my one and only father, in the studio here with us today to talk about kind of his career. And he has had a career in wooden pallets, owned a wooden pallet manufacturing facility over in Baldwin County, or better known as the Firework Exit, on I-10 at Wilcox Road. And so, Dad, welcome in to the studio.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. And you guys are really stretching it to find material to talk about. We're going to talk about pallets.
I thought, you know, it'd be something interesting, kind of on topic with what Andrew does, or, you know, bringing in something new, a little different here this morning. So I guess just talk maybe a little bit briefly about how you got into wooden pallets and how that all started back in the day.
Well, so I actually started when you were about 2 months old. It was October of 1989. I was basically unemployed. I was out hustling, trying to make money wherever I could, and a friend of mine offered me a job to run his pallet company and sawmill in Cartersville, Georgia. And from that, I met some guys through our trade association. They offered me an opportunity to be an owner, and we moved to Pensacola, Florida in 94. So we've been down here for 31 years. And moved the facility from Cantonment over to Baldwin County in 95, and we've been operating over there ever since.
Very good. Well, I know it's been a long road. You started off the company in 94, I think, with 15 employees, and then by the time you sold in 2019, there was how many?
A little over 100 employees.
Wow. Yeah. Yep. And it was cool to be able to watch that from my perspective. And I know that was a lot of long work, a lot of long days and weeks over the years. But I guess just for everybody that's out there, you know, there's people have a lot of different concepts of pallets. You see them at Sam's Club. You see them in the back of a grocery store. You see them when they bring grass to put in your front yard. Sometimes, you know, you might be looking for a pallet to do a project with around the house, whether it's furniture or whatever it may be, or do a garden in your backyard. So I guess one, talk a little bit about the history of pallets and how they're used today and how that all got started. And I do apologize. We do need to kick it to Traffic on the Fives with John, then we'll get right into that.
Okay. Real quickly, no accidents to let you know about right now. Just seeing some minor delays on I-10 eastbound as you go through the construction zone from Pine Forest through Highway 29. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Fives.
All right, and this is Walker Wilson filling in for Andrew McKay. I've got my dad, Jimmy Wilson, here in the studio trying to do a little twist on the farming segment that Andrew does. And we're talking about wooden pallets, and my dad owned a wooden pallet manufacturing company. And we're going to talk a little bit about history real quick and how pallets are used today.
So pallets kind of came into existence back in the 20s with the invention of the forklift or fork truck, and the use of pallets exploded during World War II to transport goods to the soldiers overseas and help with that campaign. And then it started working into other industries, and today there is approximately 2 million pallets, that's 2 billion, in use every day hauling goods around the country. And 93% of all products that we use in our life every day are transported on a wooden pallet, or there are some alternative materials out there, plastic, corrugated, aluminum, and steel. But 90% of all the pallets that are out in circulation are made from wood.
Wow. So with 2 billion pallets out there today, I guess, you know, every day, how big of an industry is that around the country and just the U.S.?
So our trade association did some research and the updated numbers. So the economic impact that pallets or wooden packaging has on the industry is about $40 billion indirect, and the direct is about $12.5 billion annually. And we employ 67,000 people that are actually manufacturing or repairing pallets in the U.S., and their indirect employment is somewhere around 106,000.
Wow. So once we, you know, pallets getting used, somebody purchases a truckload of pallets, they've got material on it, whether that's, you know, I guess it could be sod, it could be products at Sam's Club, it could be barrels of chemicals that are getting shipped overseas. What, you know, happens to that pallet at the end of the day? How many times can it get used? You know, is that it? We make a pallet and just toss it away?
Well, I think that's the what people believe, but honestly, pallets or the recycle rate on pallets or wooden packaging is about 95%. And we've worked really hard to try to get there. We've got recycling efforts that will take a pallet after it's emptied. They go back in, they'll inspect it, repair it, and put it back out in circulation, and they can get 10 to 15 trips on that one single pallet. And then if, you know, once it's at its end of life and there is no other, you can't use it anymore because it's not safe, then we grind it, turn it into biofuel. We turn it into ground cover, colored mulch that you see around, and also used for animal bedding.
Oh, nice. And then I know that, you know, I've had people call me because they know that my dad builds pallets, and they're like, Walker, I need to get a pallet. Where can I get one? Can Jimmy get me a pallet? And, you know, and you always say, well, what kind of pallet do they want? And of course, you know, they don't know what they want. They just want what they saw online. And I've got somebody here sending a picture. Since retiring, I've taken up woodworking. My first project completed and from an old table, and they've got a pallet leaning up against a tree here. And so, you know, how many different types of pallets are there? What are all they used for? Why are there different pallets?
So it's the size or style or type of pallet's infinite. It's basically, we engineer the pallet based on the product that it's transporting to carry the load safely and get it to the market in good condition. So to say, you know, as a standard pallet, that's not actually true. There are pallets that are specific for like consumer goods that you see in the grocery stores or at Sam's or Walmart or those kind of places. And those are typically 48 inches long by 40 inches wide. And that's probably 40% of the total industry. Then the rest of the other 60% is custom specifically designed for the package that it's transporting.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know when I was working at the pallet plant, I had to, you have a system that was created by y'all's trade association, the pallet design system, where you go in and you can input what type of lumber you're going to use, the dimensions on the types of lumber you're going to put into the pallet. And I had to upload all of those different pallet styles that just Baywood Products was making at your one facility. And I think it was somewhere near 450 different styles of pallets that y'all were doing. And you had, you know, one pallet at that time, maybe different now. But you know, one was 20 feet long, that they were putting stainless steel sheets on over in Mobile and sending overseas. But, So it is crazy. But you can imagine just everybody, you know, the average day person's thinking what they see at the grocery store, what they see at Sam's Club. But there is a lot more that goes into it. I want to talk a little bit about, I know you've been heavily involved with the NWPCA, the National Wooden Pallet Container Association. And I want to talk about that when we get in after the break. And we'll talk about what they advocate for and how you've been involved in that program.
Okay.
Hey, folks. This is Jimmy Petronas, Florida's Chief Financial Officer. Now, I just received an amazing phone call a few weeks ago that I want to tell you about. President Trump called me and said, Jimmy, I want you to run for Congress. Wow. Yes, the guy who just won a landslide victory defeating the crazy Democrats in Washington, the guy who just got shot, stood back up and said, fight, fight, fight. That guy. President Donald J. Trump told me to run for Congress. Well, my mama didn't raise a dummy, so my response to the president was a very simple, yes, sir. I will run, and we will enact President Trump's agenda. We will secure the border. We will get rid of the woke foolishness in Washington. It's an honor of a lifetime to have President Trump's endorsement. The president can count on me, and so can you. I'm Jimmy Petronas, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message. I'd be honored to have your support on January 28th, paid for by Friends of Jimmy Petronas, Inc.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, they understand these complications and have your back. Join them tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel as they guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join them tomorrow on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 9.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio Team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. This is Walker Wilson filling in for Andrew McKay here on News Radio 92.3 and 1620. We've been getting some text in on the text line, and would encourage you to do the same at 850-437-1620. And I've got in the studio here my dad, Jimmy Wilson, long time owned a wooden pallet manufacturing company over at Wilcox Road exit on I-10 in Baldwin County, better known as the firework exit, and maybe now the exit right before you get to Bucky's. But we did have somebody text in, Dad. They asked, what species of wood is used typically for a wooden pallet?
Well, today we use a variety of species. We use low-grade hardwood, and that's traditionally what people have used to manufacture pallets. That changed in the mid, say, 2011-12 time frame, and we shifted more in the southeast to southern yellow pine, and the you know, out on the West Coast, they use a lot of the Doug fir and spruce species out of Canada. And then same thing would apply to the northern parts of the country that are closer to Canada. They use a lot of spruce up there. So it's a wide variety of product. It's regionally driven by what's available in your current, you know, your market that you can get economically to your pallet plant.
Gotcha. Real quick, we'll get traffic on the fives with John, and we'll get back into it.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about, but if you're traveling on 98 going eastbound past the Navarre Beach Bridge, you're going to see some delays there due to congestion, about a 10-15 minute delay in that area. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
All right, and this is Walker Wilson filling in for Andrew McKay, and I do have my dad Jimmy in the studio this morning trying to do a twist on Andrew's farming section that he does once a month. And today we were talking about wooden pallets, and we've been talking about different kinds of pallets, sizes, what kind of wood they're used for, a little bit of history about it. But you've also, there's a trade organization called the NWPCA, the National Wooden Pallet and Container Association. I know you've gone to conferences before. I've been to conferences. I think the first time I got to go to Disney World was because of one of those conferences. So if you would just kind of talk about the organization and how you've been involved and what they do for the Wooden Pallet and Container Association or industry.
So yeah, like most industries, you've got a trade association that's lobbying and keeping up with the regulations that are created in Washington around the states that may impact your industry. And the NWPCA was founded in 1957 by a group of pallet manufacturers that wanted to have a voice. And we've grown to today, we've got 800 companies, member companies in 40 countries around the world. And the industry is made up mostly of small family-owned businesses. There's an estimate of about 3,000 of them in the United States. And a lot of those guys have been members. I've had the pleasure of meeting them and interacting with them. And the trade association, again, works on lobbying to the Congress. We've got a PAC, a political action committee, that is a bipartisan committee that is funded solely by the members of our industry. And we work toward landfill avoidance so that the pallets don't go to the landfill and get thrown away. We've worked toward today, the estimate is there's 508 million new pallets produced every year, and 341 million of those are recycled. And we capture, like I said earlier, the ones that can't be recycled, we grind them up and turn them into some other product that can be used for biofuel or ground cover.
Yeah. We did have someone text in here. I know you. I don't know that you ever made any plastic pallets, but they're just asking, where are plastic pallets made? And I guess maybe talk about what their use would be versus a wooden pallet and why maybe it, hasn't made quite the switch to plastic pallets over wood. And we got about 1 minute for you to figure that out.
So plastic, I don't know where they're manufactured around the country and around the world, but they're very expensive. They do have their place in the industry, and you have to, because of the expense and the cost of them, you have to recycle them. You got to have them in what we call a closed loop so that you have control of those pallets from the time you load them to the market and then be able to get them out of market back to the original use so that they can be cleaned and reused. And they do, they've got a long life. They can be used probably 40 or 50 times compared to a wood pallet, 10 to 15. It's just an economic driver that determines whether a company is going to go with wood or plastic.
Gotcha. And again, yeah, those are typically a rented pallet. From what I recall, you'll rent the unit and you got to turn it back and you maybe get some sort of credit.
That's right. Yes. It's you pay a trip cost.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, Dad, thanks for coming on, informing the public about wooden pallets, and we will be back right after the break.